Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get, well, not that good at it. You could do about half of your New Year's resolutions. You could, I don't know, join a CrossFit gym or something like that. Or you can start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. So, man, if you're out there and you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your own home. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work all from the comfort of your couch. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral spray and serum treatments to find out which one works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there is no uncomfortable doctor visits. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if a treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/drinkingbros. That's Hims.com/drinkingbros for your personalized hair loss options. Hims.com/drinking bros.
Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
ShopOmahaSteaks.com. Give Dad the legendary Heartland quality he deserves for Father's Day. Plus, our listeners get $35 off with the promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. When it comes to Father's Day, some things never change. Dads want steak. Yes, yes, I do. A recent survey shows 75% of Americans agree there's no better way to spend Father's Day than grilling with the family. I agree. I love nothing more than hanging out with the fam, going to the pool, drinking, and having some great meats. Omaha Steaks is the best in the biz. Also love their burgers as well. Talked about those a couple weeks ago on here with the burgers. Those smash burgers, man, they're phenomenal. They're pre-packaged, pre-smashed, all that other stuff. And I know you're saying to yourself, well, what's the difference? It's just a patty or whatever. It's not. They're caramelized and seared and all that other fun stuff there. And it literally goes from freezer to bun in 5 minutes. And that's the truth. Anybody out there who's got kids, who tear through these things and then you want to make them real quickly and everything else, my wife was able to dial these in and rip through a whole package of, I think it was 16 free is what we got in the last box.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, they're phenomenal. Omaha Steaks has been America's original butcher since 1917, family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. They also carry mouth-watering burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, desserts, and easy-to-prepare comfort food. This Father's Day, give Dad the world's best steak experience with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for guaranteed perfect gifts that deliver legendary quality. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com. And you're going to get an extra $35 off with the promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. Head on over to that site, man. You can get lost in there, by the way. Bob, is that it up there?
Yeah.
What else do they have? I ordered burgers and steak last time.
I'm messing around with their seafood section here. They got lobster, shrimp, freaking crab.
Do they really?
Yeah, dude.
Dude, I haven't ordered that. I haven't ordered that yet. All right.
King crab legs, jumbo lump crab meat if you don't feel like cracking it open.
Yeah, let's go. Okay. I was unaware of that game.
Look at these thick puppies.
Yeah. I was just a steak boy and everything else. I didn't want to say, hey, wife, cook me a lobster for dinner. Like Henry VIII or something like that. But I will now. shit, if they can just drop it off at the house, that'd be great. I didn't want to go to the fucking grocery store and get it, which is exactly what Omaha Steaks does. They just drop it off right at your doorstep.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink. Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids.
Wait, we're live?
We're live.
On the internet?
On the internets. We're live digitally. If you have a Timex watch, like I have right now.
Would you stop with that goddamn watch?
It is a very, very beautiful Timex here.
That's
it's
like a
$12
watch.
Fits all band. It is $36. It has an alarm
that
feature.
That is a watch you buy for a 12-year-old for their Easter outfit.
Or.
No, not a 45 or 60-year-old man, however
old
you are.
Or a 32-year-old professional stonk broker. Which I am.
You're going to need like a time machine to be 32 years old again, brother.
Man, a lot of people say I'm probably 29. I don't really know. A whole family burned up in a weird house fire. But we thought we would have an actual professional stonks entrepreneur on
somebody
the show
today. Somebody that knows
today.
What they're talking about instead of us two jackholes running our sucks about whatever the fuck, right?
Yeah, yeah. We got Meb Faber on the show. Best background I've ever seen, by the way.
Thanks, man. Colorado, flat tops. Y'all ever been there? Beautiful lake. Caught a nice rainbow here. Actually, my nephew caught it.
With a fly or with a...
I claim it.
What are you doing out there?
We were fly fishing mostly, but he may have been spin casting on this. Can't remember.
Okay. All right. Who's the hat there you got on? Who's your team?
Nuggets.
There it is.
Denver.
Waiting for you to
Colorado,
say
Colorado mostly, which is the Broncos town, but... But the Nugs are where it's been last few years.
Yeah, that Nug life, dude, has been sweet once you guys got the Joker up there. Sleeper team, I put a little cash on there for the championship out of the Nuggets this year. A little bit outside the popular picks. That's what I do. I gamble. And I do that with my stonks as well. What's the name of the firm that you run? Tell everybody that.
Cambria, located here in Manhattan Beach, California. We're a public asset manager, pretty quanty. Got about 12 funds, billion in assets. Been around since before the last financial crisis, about 2007.
Oh, you guys made it through that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. A lot of people didn't in LA. By the way, I spent 18 years out in Los Angeles. I know where you are, and I'm surprised your tan isn't better down there, my man.
It's February. Come on. Oh, it's March. God, this has been a long year already.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, I mean, we've been around since the last financial crisis. I say this to everyone, not just in asset management, but anybody who's doing a startup, anybody who's writing a blog, doing a podcast, the biggest compliment you can give someone is just surviving. Forget like, you know, making a ton of money and anything else. Just having a company or an effort that survives. I mean, that's the biggest compliment you can give anyone.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, look, I was out there when that crisis happened last time, and it nuked a lot of companies, man. So to say that is honestly saying that with like a badge of honor at this
point.
Wait.
So when did your company start? What year did your company start?
06. 06. 07.
So yeah. Some people could, I mean, you could make the argument, not a correlative one necessarily, or not a causal one, but a correlative one that you guys may have caused the financial crisis, right? Because you were too successful and you fucked everybody up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that's not
person,
that that was
two person team at that point. So
oh, so
I
smaller. That's a that is really interesting though. That it's not typical for a big financial company to start in right before a crash, make it through that, and then prosper really well afterwards.
Yeah,
that's like an atypical climb to success.
If you look at a lot of the startups, though, I mean, if you look at some of the best companies, not just over the past, you know, financial crisis, but back to the internet bust, too. I mean, Google and a lot of these companies getting founded during the bad times, because, right, you have to have that resilience to survive.
Right.
Airbnbs, the world, the Ubers in this cycle. If we ever have a bear market again, who knows? But that's often the ones that kind of end up becoming the phoenixes later, right? They start in the really, really tough times.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon was kind of the same way. They were selling fucking books in 1997.
Now they're burning them.
Yeah.
So, you know, what a difference 25 years has made. Yeah. They're taking all the Seuss books down. I'm kidding, obviously, but we wanted to have you on today because of, you know, what's been going on with GameStop and AMC. Now, us in particular, we went hard on that. Okay, diamond hands, laser eyes. You know, you said you have got a 3-year-old right before we went on the air. I've got a 2-year-old. When I took him to the podiatrist to get him some shots, they were like, hey, how's he feeling? How's everything going? I was like, I'm going to need shots for the moon because that's where I'm taking this rocket ship with AMC is to the moon, and I'm taking my baby with me. When this was all happening, we were, like, in all sincerity, in the middle of it where GameStop was going off. We had a company meeting at the end of the day, and we sat down. We got some producers behind camera who do a lot of day trading and crazy shit all the time, right? We sat down with them, and we said, look, what do you think the next thing is? What's everybody talking about on Reddit? Where are we going with this? And then we'll just do it live on air because we have a ton of listeners and all that stuff and see where it goes. I think it was... Paper Hands Dan back there, who was like AMC because he ended up selling his. He was like, dude, AMC is the next one. All right, great. We went on air. We did it. We got it at 5, rode it to the moon at 20, and then kind of waited to see what happened after that. Well, what happened after that was they turned off the stocks. TD Ameritrade, Robinhood, all these guys just put a stop to trading of GME and AMC. To me, I didn't find that to be fair, and I didn't know it was possible, to be honest with you. What's your take on that?
Oh boy, you've opened the floodgates. Okay, let me give 10 seconds of foundation, lay some concrete first, because I think it's relevant to what we're going to talk about. When you talk about investing in stocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you investing in at the end of the day? You're investing in businesses. I mean, this could be private, whether you're investing in Joe's Pizzeria down the street or whether it's Amazon. And that's what you want to invest in over time. And there has never been a better time in history than in 2021 to be an individual investor. We have almost 100,000 investors at my firm. So I talk to individuals all day long. It's low cost. You have a world of choice. That wasn't the case in decades past, but what you have to remember, and I got in trouble, you know, I always do tweeting about this today, is that you're on your own in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. So Wall Street, and this is all flavors and not just Wall Street, we're talking about if you want to go buy a house, you want to do anything, you want to go to the car dealership. If you ever bought a used car, a new car, my God, what a terrible experience. You have to realize that no one is looking out for you, and you have to look out for yourself. And so in some cases of the financial world, you have the fiduciaries. I'm required by law to act in my investor's best interest, but in many cases you don't. And you have to be careful on how any company makes their money, okay? That's the lead in. And this applies to everything in life. Incentives drive everything. So everyone is trying to act in their best interest. So unless you have someone working in your best interest by law, like a doctor, right? Hippocratic oath, or by incentives, then you have to be really careful. So leading into this year, let's talk about your standard brokerage, right? Robinhood. Historically, the way brokers make money, if you think back to the old days, like E.F. Hutton, Dean Witter, Schwab, right? Commissions were a big part of it. And Robinhood, I'll give them credit, they've pushed the industry forward by reducing commissions. But when you have Robinhood in your name, you better have a pretty good narrative and story around that. You know, steal from the rich, give to the poor, right? Mm-hmm. Enabling investors. But the way that most brokerages make money today, this isn't just Robinhood, it's everyone. Number one is interest, right? You got 100 grand in your account, but you're only invested 50. They're going to make interest on that 50 grand just sitting in cash and probably pay you nothing. Okay. That's banks too, by the way. Bank mm-hmm. America, you look at your checking balance, you're getting probably 0.01%. Already not in your favor. Not cool. Second, the things like Robinhood, because they don't have commissions, they'll take your orders, they'll sell them to hedge funds and everyone else. You know, that's creating incentives already. So they want you to trade.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's a big part. And then next, and this got esoteric quick, so I apologize, is they'll lend out your shares to short-selling hedge funds, and they keep it. In both cases, they keep all the money. Okay, so what does that incentivize? That incentivizes brokerages like Robinhood to want you to trade. You sign up for an account, they opt you into a margin account, they show you confetti, they opt you into margins, all this sort of stuff, because they make money on you doing these sort of things. Most of, and by the way, the disclosure coming into this, our oldest fund goes back to 2013. It buys stonks.
Yep.
That invest in great companies that are low valuations that return cash to shareholders, right? We bought GameStop in 2013. So you want to talk about diamond hands. We held this dog for 8 years. It went from 30 to 50 to 40 to 30 to 20 to 10 to 2. And coming into this year, we were actually the largest ETF in the entire marketplace as a concentrated position in GameStop, oddly enough.
Why? And I apologize for interrupting you, but why was that when no one else seemingly had this stock? Because, look, it's a fucking dying business at this point. The brick-and-mortar video game store is a dying business. What gave you guys the foresight to say, hey, man, we're going to hold on to this thing even at $2? Were you looking on Reddit? Like, do you have guys that are looking on Reddit? How did you know?
For 6-7 years, we did on this podcast last year, be like, Meb, why are you so dumb for holding the stock for 7 years? You just lost 90%. By the way, going back to the Amazon comment earlier, you know, the media loves to say, by the way, if you put $10,000 in Amazon in 1990, you'd be worth $20 million, whatever it is today. They neglect that at one point, Amazon has had a 95% decline, multiple 50% declines. Like, you have to be a psychopath to own it.
That's, I mean, they really were hard to do. They were negative cash flow for the first, what, 15 fucking years of that company or something like that? Well, a lot longer than you would expect a tech startup to be.
Right.
Yeah. So remember the, like, Barron's cover, Amazon.bomb, right?
Yeah.
But they made it. Congrats. $1 trillion-plus company. I have a tiff with Amazon because of this is one of the reasons most of my books are free, by the way. I've written 5 books. And because they kind of perpetuate a lot of fraud on their marketplace. Not the point. We're getting off topic. So
You can talk shit about Amazon if you'd like here, because we've got our own bones to pick with those assholes.
Yeah.
They've censored our last 2 books that have come out. One time was clearly calculated. It was right before. It was like a week and a half prior to when it would have registered on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
And they just pulled it down for review for that period, so it wouldn't hit, basically.
Content review is what they hit us with.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how did you stick to GameStop? I don't...
Okay, so this strategy is it buys businesses, companies, stocks that are trading at cheap valuations, which is what you want over time in general, that are generating lots of cash and returning it to shareholders through dividends or buybacks. I mean, this strategy has been around for 100 years. Mm. Nothing new. And we've been doing it. So it ends up owning stuff like Apple, all sorts of different good companies. And you can see the holdings online. And the concept's called shareholder yield. The book also free to download because of this Amazon tift on our website. So we bought it because it had these characteristics, and we're quant. So I don't, half the time, like, you look at the names in the fund, like, as long as it meets the criteria, it stays in there. Okay. And so it's cheap. It's distributing this cash flows, which it was for a lot of the years, but a declining business.
So can I ask you something about that? Just the reason it works. Is it because you have a large amount of consistently yielding but low risk bundled together, so you're getting exponential results without any exponential risk? Is that what's happening?
So if you look at why investing, this is a great tangent, why investing in stocks works over time. Again, you're buying businesses. But if you look at the stock market as a whole, and if you just buy the entire stock market, you know, its return for the last 120 years, let's call it, we'll round up and call it 10% a year, which is amazing. But if you actually look at the stocks within the index, it's a pretty small percentage that drive the returns of the whole index. Again, the Amazons, the Apples, the Walmarts, the world. And a lot of stocks don't. And many go to zero. That's normal, right? That's creative destruction. That's free markets.
Right.
And this is like what we call power laws at work. Same thing investing in private companies, where you invest in Uber. You invest in 100 companies, you have one Uber. Uber determines the returns of all your venture capital. So one way to invest and succeed is to own the entire market. That works. Works great. Now, you can do a little bit better. The problem with owning the whole market, there's no tethered valuation. And we can talk about this later, but for example, right now, the US stock markets, it's expensive. So if you tilt towards companies, it's like Warren Buffett, right? This has been around since time of Ben Graham, 100 years ago. You buy cheaper companies that are trading below their intrinsic value, historically you've done better. Mm. And it's pretty simple stuff, but like anything, these things go in and out of favor, can last not weeks, months, quarters, but years and decades. Where right now growth has been outperforming much more versus value. So historically, this is sort of a value type of strategy. So if you look at the names in there, some are growthy like Apple, but some are not so much. You know, some of the retailers, some energy now.
Yeah, General Electric.
Banks.
Yeah, all those guys have been dead for forever. But yeah. This still brings me to GameStop. What?
I've got a theory on that. You know the guess what the average age of a video game player in America is right now? Guess the average age.
I would say 35 because it's
38 years old.
Started 20 years. Yeah,
it's 38 years old. That means people that are now professionals and homeowners are still spending money on that, and not only are they spending money now, but they're buying everything, and they're spending money on the platform. It is a Even if GameStop goes digital at some point, it only becomes a conduit for digital content or whatever the fuck, it's still going to make money forever.
If it goes digital. We'll, and that's the thing is like,
you know, they're not stupid.
Well, I'm Gen Z and we already have,
we already have a
digital company.
You're almost a boomer.
I'm like 19 years
old.
You
actually might be a boomer.
No, but you already have digital downloading companies and all this other stuff. So why GameStop, who doesn't have that yet? To me, it felt like a Blockbuster, right? When Blockbuster went out of business, I think they could have took their name and really ramped that into the next Netflix if they had the foresight and everything else, right? They did not. They tried it late for a little bit and then it bombed out. And I believe the stock still exists at some point. But GameStop wasn't actively trying to do that. So why did you have it? And then do you have people on your team?
Let me give you an example. So, everything we do is kind of rules quant based on history. It has to have kind of four criteria. The first is when we launch funds, there's like 10,000 funds out there, right? Why do you need more? It has to be, we consider it to be totally new and different or much better or much cheaper. And we'll get into fees and taxes in a bit because it's really important. But two, it has to be based on some sort of academic or practitioner research. I started my career writing academic papers and blogs, but then it became books. And so we test a lot of these strategies and ideas, if we can, going back 100 years and show how they worked over time. And so this particular approach worked well. And I want to make a key distinction that I think a lot of people get in trouble with. You have to make a distinction between the business and the stock. And so you can have the world's best business. I mean, I don't know, something like an Apple, who knows, a Tesla, a product somebody loves, and then the stock is really expensive. You could have the world's worst business, maybe not the world's worst, but not a great business, and the stock's really cheap, okay? And so a good example is like Cisco.
Yep.
One of the world's top companies. In the late 90s, that stock got so expensive. Since 2000, the business is up like five times. Earnings, revenues, everything. It's just crushed it. And you say, oh my God, what has the stock done? Stock's not even up back to where it was in 2000. That's 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so these things can kind of, get stretched out like a rubber band. And so I don't remember 2013 MEB, but if I had to go back and say, why did we buy this at the time? It fit the criteria. It was probably a cheap company relative to where they were, and we've continued to hold it. Going back to the early part of your question is kind of, how did things go down and why did they go down? There's a number of different moving factors. You know, if you look at the Robinhood of the world, and we tweeted about this, we're like, look, Robinhood is not the good guy in this story. They're not the hero of this story. Most of what they do opts you into things that behaviorally speaking are not good for you as an investor, right? Most investors should not be opted into margin accounts and trading options. They shouldn't be, herded into these certain areas. You want fiduciaries to help you, but because that's the way they make money, they're incentivized to do that. Now, where they got into trouble, I think there was a lot of, people we didn't know and we may never know I actually don't think that they were nefarious. I think they were just incompetent. And incompetent, what means is they didn't have enough liquidity reserves or foresee the possible situation they got themselves into. And they were got themselves into that problem because of some of these decisions to opt people into margin accounts, concentrated, yada, yada. Now, I think they'll end up paying some big fines because the CEO made some statements that were probably not true or at least questionable, right?
Yeah, Vlad, they trotted that guy out there. He looked like a raped prisoner. Forgive my language on that. I don't use the word prisoner much on this show.
I really believe that he was just a lightning rod. Like, this guy's fucking dumb. He's made a lot of mistakes already. We've had some conversations with him, and he's going to say some stupid shit. If they ask him questions, put him out there, let him say stupid shit. His company will pay fines, and they'll ignore everybody else. Is probably what happened, my opinion.
Maybe, but to me, it felt a little bit like, since we were talking about 07 at the top of the show, who was it, Lehman Brothers, that they threw to the wolves, and they were like, look, we'll give you one, right? This is a mess. It's a huge fuck-up. We got to give the world one sacrificial lamb. It felt like Vlad and Robin Hood on this one, because what they did, in my opinion, whether it's not nefarious or not, right, should be illegal. And they shouldn't have a fucking business. And if you don't have the money to back it, you should be out of there. And how is the SEC not checking that?
The effective outcome is the same, though, right? So if they say if they stop trading because they don't have the fluid cash to fucking pay for it, or liquid cash to play for it, or they fucking continue selling even they don't have the cash, you're not getting paid either way, right?
Right, but they should have a disclaimer up front that says, hey, guys, if the stonks do too well, I might not have the money to pay you.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Meb, but I don't think a disclaimer is necessary there because that's the law already.
There's a couple things going on. And let's be clear, Robinhood wasn't the only one.
Oh, no.
But because of their brand and their name, we're democratizing investing, all these things they claim, they were the poster child and should be. But they weren't the only brokers that got into trouble because of this. Now, there's plenty of brokerages that did not get into trouble, nor did they suspend trading. We talk a lot about this. We say, look, one of the Times' best fiduciaries, it's been doing this for 50 years. They manage in the trillions. I mean, Vanguard, for example. Now, their user interface looks like it was built in 1980.
Yes.
You go try to trade on there.
Yep.
They make you jump through so many hoops if you want to trade options and do things. Borrow money, like they make it hard, as they should, because that's in your best interest.
Right. It's our life insurance, ironically, but yeah. Right.
But to be clear, by the way, this was not bad for Robinhood. They're going to come out of this. I saw their stock trading on the private markets at about $60 billion. So this, I think, is going to be a massive positive. They'll pay a not that big of a fee. Let's call it $100 million, maybe.
Now, when you say fee, are you meaning fine?
Fine, yeah.
Okay.
I think the history of asset management is littered with companies, and Silicon Valley is particularly bad about this in the fintech space. The move fast and break things, I think, is a horrible attitude in asset management and finances because it has a real impact on people's lives. And so you have this history of these firms paying fees, but often they're kind of toothless, right? They're not that big relative to the rewards they've accrued from either making claims or setting things up. If I was a investor, an individual investor, this all goes back to my number one thing that I talk about all the time that drives me nuts, which is, we don't teach personal finance and money and investing in school anywhere. It's like 10% of high schools do it. Not even middle school or elementary school. The good news is you know how to speak in Latin, write cursive, calculus, whatever it may be. But the most basic, simple thing that everyone needs to understand, and I was getting into it on Twitter today about it, and I said even our politicians don't understand basic personal finance. And why would you expect them to? Because they didn't learn it either in high school. Mm-hmm. And so educating, the best possible thing that could happen to everyone in our country is they all become investors, right? This wealth and income gap, the best thing is you get everyone to be investing, but not the way that kind of, finding partners and fiduciary and setting up guide rails so that people don't get hosed like they did in this scenario.
But this was not the people's fault. Like, I look, man, I hear you on studying and learning and all that shit, right? I'm from Georgia originally. Not the best education system. However, in fourth grade, one of our classes was we had to pick a stonk and then track that for the entire quarter. And it was a newspaper. We'd go through the newspaper every day, see the ticker, the up and down, kid, way to go. And then whoever won at the end of that quarter got, you know, a puppy, you know, wrapped around a trophy or whatever it was. Whatever they were given out in Georgia, like a grease pig or something, right?
Or it was a picture of Awesome Bill from Dawsonville.
Yeah.
Bill Elliott from Dawsonville.
Yes, or you got some free carpet from Dalton, Georgia. Whatever it is, right? Therefore, growing up, I knew about stonks. I knew everything that was going on during this, right? And yes, I understand that I'm different than some other people in that realm a little bit. But when I talk to younger kids who are saying, hey, they're looking at this in particular, the GameStop and this AMC situation, and they were like, look, man, I was interested in trading and learning about finances and everything else, and then they turned off the market multiple times. I don't have an explanation for them. I'm not sure how that's helping anyone, to be honest with you.
My explanation is the lesson learned is you need to find a partner, a broker, who's on your side, right? Or a advisor or someone who's not gonna bend you over like Robinhood did. And however, the problem is like they have this veneer of being in your best interest, and it's not. Like everything they do is to maximize revenue. I mean, where do they make most of their revenue from? It's from selling your orders to hedge funds.
Right.
They lend your GameStop to hedge funds to short. So by the way, this gets a little esoteric quick. And by the way, I went to high school up the road in North Carolina. We had the same stock game.
We're at North Carolina.
Winston-Salem.
I think there was an episode of Saved by the Bell about this too.
It really was.
Where they bought like potatoes. They were trading in produce futures or something like that. And Zach fucked it up, obviously.
Yeah, he fucked it up. R.I.P. Screech.
I mean, he wasn't involved, I don't think.
Yeah, well, he's dead. He's dead now, so he's not involved in anything. But even in North Carolina, yes, kind of same education system and all that stuff. But, you know, look, you get... The market stopped.
Oh, wait.
It physically stopped.
I grew up in
stocks.
South Carolina. I'm kind of sandwiched between you guys.
Yeah, you're dumb as shit, too, dude. You're with us.
Is this like a...
This is a learning event is what we're doing here.
It is.
We're not only podcast hosts, but we're also teaching.
So
how do you stop the market?
It.
Yes. Why do stop the market?
Let me make a comment on time frame, and we'll come back to this. But the best thing an individual has going for them is their time horizon. So like Buffett talks about this. He's like, it would be totally fine if the market was closed 364 days a year and you could only transact one day, because the time frame that most investors, almost everyone, should be operating on is in terms of decades, right? So if you compound your money at 10%, you 10x your money in 25 years. 50 years, you 100 exit. So this get rich slow requires no effort. You don't have to do anything. What it requires is the main challenges of saving and investing. And by the way, we have the belief that how much and when you decide to save and invest in the first place is vastly more important than even what you invest in. It doesn't even matter what you invest in so much, as long as you have some of the main ingredients: stocks, bonds, real assets like real estate and commodities, right? That's the big lesson to me. And so going back to this, the whole situation, there's a lot of lessons that we learned. There's a lot of things that should be fixed, right? Banks fail, brokerages fail. That's just the way that it is. It's been that way for 100 years. And you end up with someone, I mean, there was a very real scenario where Robinhood didn't make it out of this because they didn't have enough reserves.
They shouldn't have, by the way. In many cases,
like your accounts, I learned this, I didn't know this. If you own crypto at Robinhood, it's not, you have the insurance for a lot of accounts not covered there. You would add a zero. They would have gone to, it's unfortunate. I don't like the way it went down. Is there some more nefarious things going on in the background? Perhaps, right? But again, find you someone who's on your team. And let me give you one more example. So we own mostly stocks across the board, U.S., everywhere else around the world. we lend those shares out to the short sellers, okay? The big difference is all the revenue we get from that, all of it, we give back to the shareholders. And the good guys do that. And that revenue can be extremely material, okay? And so in some cases, it can be entire percentage points. So there are brokerages like Interactive Brokers, I think Schwab does it some, that if they go lend your shares at GameStop, they'll give you that money back, at least maybe half of it, but they'll give you some. And so there's ways to find people that are aligned with you, you know, that I think that that do a better job than what happened. And hopefully there'll be some regulations and updates to the way the infrastructure works. I think most of it was actually just a antiquated plumbing problem that Robinhood never foresaw and got totally upside down on.
Cool. Yeah, that's a
good answer. But the plumbing is coming from the stock exchange itself, right? So as a...
Well, they're still on the hook for that money, though. If they don't have the liquidity to pay it off, then they're still on the hook for it, and they just go bankrupt, and you don't get any of your fucking money at that point. Especially as if he's saying, if you're using crypto to load currency on, and that's what you're trading with in Robinhood, none of that shit's insured, so that's just gone.
So the position, so most brokerages have the insurance that'll cover, I think it's 250 grand of positions. Some have insurance that covers more, so you're fine. So it'll go to, this has happened a million times where brokerages or something goes under. They did this, you know, many, many decades ago to protect people, right? Because banks used to go under all the time for the same reason. They have fractional reserves. They lend it out. There's a run on the bank. And so this is why, by the way, Vlad didn't come out and say, honestly, we have a liquidity problem, because what would have happened? It would have been a run on the bank. Everyone pulled their money out, and then they absolutely would have gone bankrupt. So he wasn't honest about it, which he'll get fined for, right? And so it's this whole circular thing. The big plumbing part, man, we got so deep in the weeds quick on this. It's the DTCC, Options Clearing Corporation. It still takes 2 days to settle a trade in the U.S. Maybe blockchain will fix this eventually, modern technology where it's more instantaneous. But it has to go back to the decision by Robinhood to screw you over by opting you into a margin account instead of a cash account, so that you'll borrow money and so you'll trade, you know, on leverage and do all these things not in your best interest.
I understand all that, right? But there's no reason that guy shouldn't be sitting in fucking jail. That company shouldn't be bankrupt right now and paying the price. If I'm a normal, like, let's say it wasn't GameStop and it was AMC, right? Let's say I have stock in Delta and a plane crashes today. 178 people die. Stock is going to fucking nosedive. I can't stop the market and get out of it. These guys clearly could. I don't have an explanation for
people.
Well,
they didn't stop the market. They just stopped trading on their platform.
No. The market stopped six times. Correct me if I'm wrong. Six times throughout the day for GameStop and AMC in particular. What was it? 3 weeks ago?
I think it was they were stopping initiating new positions, so buying more. I think you could actually sell, but you couldn't buy more. Which, by the way, shouldn't be true if you have a cash account, because it's fully paid for.
Right. Yeah.
Again,
and I was watching.
The problem was with the plumbing. It's like a huge turd stuck in the toilet, and it backed everything up, and they didn't have a plunger. And you know, you should. I mean, if you have a toilet in your house, you don't have a plunger, that's on you, right?
Yeah.
You can't run a brokerage and not understand how this works.
Yeah, you're gonna have to reach in there and grab that bass right out of the sea
and
yourself.
Shake it up in the air, or take a picture with it out next to you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you're gonna pull a turd out, you may as well take a picture.
It's like especially if bear with a salmon.
If we're in the middle of a fish metaphor, you kind of have to. I feel like.
Yeah.
And now this is all hypothetical because we just made this shit up.
Obviously. But, and if you teach a man to fish, you know.
Or if you set him on fire, he'll burn for the rest of his life.
Either way. But with that being said, right, there was clearly a problem. I don't know what to tell people, because we've been doing live shows for forever on this network. And younger people who have come up and they're like, hey, man, I want to invest in stonks, right? I want to get in the game. This was their first time. It was a very bad taste in their mouth. And no one has an appropriate answer to tell anyone of why the markets were halted, why this company Robinhood was able to halt trading, not let them sell at higher prices. Now you, owning a huge brokerage firm and all that other stuff, you're sitting on a shit ton of GME. As this is going through the roof and the market is constantly stopping that day and the 2 days following it, you had to have been staring at the TV the same way that I was. Like, it was the end of The Sopranos and it cuts to black in the diner scene and you're like, well, what the fuck? When is it coming back? Because they don't tell you that either. They're not saying, hey, guys, You know, it's not like a 1950s movie. They'll be like, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Go enjoy your concessions. They're not doing that. So what do you do as somebody who owns this much GameStop?
I think this is really important question. And I'm going to tell you a few things that are going to be unpopular with some of the listeners, but I think they're honest. And at least you can appreciate me speaking my truth. If you're a young person, preferably with not a lot of money, the best possible thing that can happen to you as a young investor is you lose that money investing mm-hmm. in trading.
I agree.
Because you learn some lessons, you get some scars, and you understand that this is not, A, it's not a game, and B, that it has real, you know, impact and repercussions. Yeah. Look, this is me 20 years ago in the late 90s. You know, I was a university student thinking I was hot shit, making a ton of money, trading, options, all that. I mean, literally, the names were different. It was E-Trade instead of Robinhood.
Right.
The internet.comers instead of this. But, you know, I blew up my entire account on an options trade and, you know, ate bologna sandwiches for a year. And that memory is seared in my mind. And you talk to a lot of the world's greatest traders. They had that experience at some point. And many of them have hundreds or thousands of really painful experiences with trades, right? So you start to learn some things. And one of the takeaways from GameStop is a lot of the mechanics of it, ignoring the brokerages of the actual what happened with the trade, are story as old as time. You know, you have stocks that, you know, there's people lined up on one side, the longs, and then you have the short sellers on the other side, and there's a battle. Sometimes, it's my belief, neither affects the outcome. What affects the outcome, and I was talking with Elon Musk on Twitter about this a couple years ago. He's complaining about short sellers. I said, look, short sellers are a national treasure. They uncover 1,000 times more bad behavior and fraud in corporate America than the bad behavior a few of them propagate. And there's almost none left because we've been in a bull market for 10 years. So they were the heroes of the last crisis. People forget this, but now some of them are the villains. Now, shorting GameStop was a really stupid trade. It was a really stupid trade because it was already down a ton. It had very real assets, and there was a ton of short interest, which is like kindling on the fire. So Melvin Capital shorting that was a really dumb trade. Now, I don't know if it was nefarious, but he deserves to lose a lot of money like he did. But coming into this, so let's say you're an investor. A lot of investors just buy something, and this is institutions as well as individuals. They buy something, they spend all their time worrying about, should I buy gold? What about crypto? What about Amazon? Is now the right time? What about the Fed? Is it expensive? Is it cheap? They buy it and then what next, right? They don't think about what they plan on doing this investment. This applies to houses, this applies to cars, this applies to anything. So we encourage almost every investor, write down your investing plan ahead of time, share it with a significant one, a loved one, whatever, and say, here's my plan of what to do with this. Here's what I'm going to do if it goes up, doubles in money, it doubles in return. Here's what I'm going to do if it goes down by 50 or 100%. Here's what I'm going to do if it goes nowhere for 10 years, right? And you walk through that because the biggest problem, the biggest single failure point, fracture point in all of investing is the emotional behavioral side. And let's be clear, this has been an incredible environment for U.S. stocks, have destroyed everything in the last 10 years. That is not normal. That is a pretty rare scenario, particularly versus the rest of the world. We haven't really had a big bear market since the financial crisis, but it's normal for stocks to go down by 50, 80%. The best possible thing that could happen for young people is that stocks go down a ton, right? Because they get a huge discount on all the future cash flows. So, look, hopefully take this as an instructional lesson. I mean, for us, you know, we come to it this every day with rules, right? And so a simple framework for how to think about investments, and this is super technical, is to go halvesies, right? You know, never think in binary terms of I got to be in or out of something. You can scale in, you can scale out. It's less fun because you don't get to cheer for it, you know, like cheering for the Nuggets to win the championship. And so thinking in terms of, hey, like, so what we do is we scale out of positions as they go up, we'll add as they go down. And that way you're never sort of all in on something. So we still own some, we sold some on the way up, who knows what's going to happen. We rebalance these every 3 months. We may not own it. We may own it next quarter.
Meb, we've got to pay for our own stonks. So forgive us, but we got some sponsors to read. First up is GhostBed.com/drinking bros. Best in the biz. Best in the biz. Got a young man, a young drinking bro named Mike Boscovich at my house. He's doing the restoration from the flooding and all that other stuff. And he goes, "Hey man, this is real. Your house is literally full of all of the sponsors." And he slept on a ghost bed last night, Dan. And he goes, "Dude, that's the greatest night's sleep of all time." And I was like, "Did you think I was fucking lying to you?"
Wait, he's sleeping in your bed?
Correct.
That's weird. That's not normal.
Well, we have a guest room.
It doesn't matter.
Yes, it's fine. No. I have ghost beds in the guest room.
No, anytime you drinker bros out there, if you come stay at my place to work overnight, you're sleeping at the foot of my bed, but not on it.
Well, the thing is, Mike is here for like 3 or 4 days. I mean, we lost the downstairs. So like,
I just want somebody in an elf costume sleeping at the foot of my bed. I don't know why.
It'd be great. Yeah. It'd be great. I said, "Hey man, I'll sleep at the shitty motel down the street. Cause we got to meet these guys in the morning and blah, blah, blah." And you take the ghost bed. So that's where he's at. So just know you got another fan out there. GhostBed.com/drinking bros. Right now they get 40% off the bundle packages, 30% off of everything if you type in the promo code drinking bros at checkout, and you're good to go on anything in the store, sheets, pillows, mattresses, or just the adjustable bases by itself. You're fine. As always, they get a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there at GhostBed.com/drinking bros. So go there, bundle these deals together, and enjoy the best night's sleep. Next up, we got a new one to the show. We got a couple new ones today, D'Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
This is Lucy.co. It's a CO. I love a good .co. Promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off all products on your first order. And that is including, D'Anthony, the gum or the lozenges. I like to read that first to let you know what it is. Nicotine company. A lot of peeps addicted to nicotine. Cigarettes, tobacco, you know, the chaw, yeah. The dip, all
yeah,
of
yeah, if
the
you're
things.
Looking to switch to something, to a source of nicotine that is not going to ruin your life, mm-hmm. obviously, then, you know, it's a good thing to switch from one thing to another when one has doesn't have the same side effects, right? We all know about tobacco and what it does. But nicotine, I mean, there's been a lot of conversation about this and that about it. There's Aubrey Marcus has talked about it a lot. We're not going to get into all of that. Nicotine is, we have to say this as a disclaimer warning, the product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Yes. Nicotine obviously is something that some people need, or you want to switch from one thing to another. This is a good way to do it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's finally a tobacco alternative that doesn't suck. Caltech? Yeah, Caltech was the article I was reading. Mm-hmm. The Caltech guys did this, and they were former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Lucy has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine in the cherry ice flavor. Each and every flavor tastes great. They got the wintergreen, the cinnamon, the pomegranate.
And the gum, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those are really good. Those are also 4 milligrams of nicotine.
I know. And it's great. Some people just use them to get going, like you were saying with Aubrey Marcus and those guys.
Yeah,
it's convenient,
there's
discreet.
There's a lot of stuff. I mean, we're not going to make any medical claims about it, but you can do your own research on this stuff and figure out what the benefits are. So if you don't want to be walking around with a vape or cigarettes that smell weird or have shitty teeth because you've been chewing tobacco, this is definitely a good alternative.
Yeah. It's 2021. Get rid of cigarettes. Unplug your vape. Throw out your dip. Get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges. This is the real deal on this one, man. I know a bunch of shows that are doing this right now. Subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. It's so simple. You don't have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down. Drinking Bros listeners, go to lucy.co, that's C-O, and use the promo code Drinking Bros to get 20% off of all products on your first order, including gum or lozenges. That's Lucy, lucy.co. Use the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. Lucy.co, got to use that Drinking Bros for the checkout. I smoked for a long time, man.
Same. Yeah, when I was in the Army pretty much the whole time.
I quit. Shit, man. I'm happy looking back on it, obviously. It was maybe 12 or 13 years ago, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I was just like, man, this is fucking bullshit. This will help you get out of that. Next up.
Get out of your shitty car insurance.
Yeah.
By going to gabby.com/drinkingbros. It's gabi.com/drinkingbros. Most people are overpaying both on their car and home insurance. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everybody, actually. I've seen some of these studies. It's ridiculous. This is free. There's no obligation. You go in and put in your information. And, you know, this time of year, is a lot of people are looking for new stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's the rebirth period. I think it got a little jacked up because of COVID, but, you know, this is the time where people are still kind of fixated on their New Year's resolutions, and you're in that median time between then and tax time. So right. People are starting to think about money. You finally paid off your credit card from all the stupid shit you bought over Christmas and stuff. Now, how'd you like to keep an extra $1,961 in your pocket, right?
That'd be great.
That's how much the average Gabby customer saves per year.
And it's, you know, it takes the pain out of shopping for insurance by just calling all these fucking people.
Yeah.
It does it for you. It's an apples to apples comparison of your current coverage
right.
with 40 of the top insurance providers like Progressive, Nationwide, yeah. Travelers, all the big all dogs. Them, yeah.
For home and auto insurance, by the way. And, you know, you can see quotes for the exact same coverage that you currently have, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're worried about one of these systems that like give you, it's a bait and switch type thing. Now you can see exactly what coverage you have. You can see from all these different companies what it is. It's super quick and easy to do.
Yeah. I'd used it right before the floods because we're getting a new company car here. We're getting yeah. some Broncos up in this bitch. It was one of those things where, boom, it popped up really fast. It reminded me of like Kayak, to be honest with you.
Or hotels.com yes, or something like that. Yeah.
It's easy.
Or Expedia, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, logging in with your current and you, so you go to Gabby's site, gabby.com/drinkingbros. You get signed up, then you log in to your current insurance site through Gabby. That's they pull your information about what kind of policy you currently have, and then match that to all the other policies that exist out in the world.
Yeah,
I mean, you this is work that would take 2 to 3 weeks for if you called some kind of broker to have them do it. Here, they're going to do it in a matter of minutes.
Yeah,
you
know super I mean? Easy. I did it for that Bronco and everything. I just want to see if I was getting the best fucking rates, mm-hmm. dude. You never know. You're probably overpaying, just saying, on your car and home insurance. See how much Gabby can save you. It's totally free to check it out, and there's no obligation. Go to gabby.com/drinkingbros. That's gabi.com/drinkingbros. Gabby.com/drinkingbros will give you the best rates, and then you'll be able to choose from there. I appreciate it, Meb.
Cool. So, speaking of that, you never really said why you bought originally or held on to GME all this time.
Okay. So shareholder yield. If you think about investing, it's a very simple concept. What do you want to own when you own a company? You want to own a company that's generating earnings, revenue, profit, right? So they're going to be in business. They got a good business. And the way to determine that is they have those metrics, okay? That they're also a business that is on your side, meaning they have the ability to return cash to shareholders. They have so much cash, they're returning it to shareholders. Dividends is a really popular way they do it. Stock buybacks are another way that the company's doing it, including both of those into one metric. We call it shareholder yield. And then we want those companies, Buffett says this, you know, there's no better way to spend cash than a company trading below its intrinsic value, buying back its own shares, right? So buying these cheap companies that are generating a ton of cash and distributing it, which was GameStop back then. Mm. It may not be GameStop now. And so once we initially buy it, we continue to hold it as long as it's cheap. And GameStop just got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
But you almost didn't have a choice because it probably when you bought it, would you say 13?
Yeah.
What was the high on that? 30 or 40 bucks back
50.
Then?
50. Yeah, okay. 50.
So you had it at 50 and then you sat on it down to what? $3? Somewhere in
yep.
there? Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And so at that point, if you were my broker and you were holding on to that, I'd say, hey, Meb, what the fuck are you doing? Get me out of this. I'm hemorrhaging money. Unless Reddit comes along and saves this stock, it probably goes bankrupt in the next year or so. I mean, you could probably get some assets out of the brick and mortars just by selling the real estate, I would imagine, if they are, you know, in fact, the owners of it and not just renting that real estate. I'm not sure. I don't know the financial side of it. the biggest issue with this, you know, speaking the truth, like my truth is I don't think these kids were wrong at all with AMC and with GameStop. And I don't think they learned a lesson because this hasn't happened before.
Well,
no one has ever just shut down the market unless there was a catastrophe. Hurricane Sandy, when I was there in New York, they ended up shutting it down for that.
But you got to remember, but the market didn't shut down. It was only a couple brokerages shut down.
Yeah, I think that's the problem for me,
though. You
could
still trade at Schwab. You could have traded at Vanguard. For sure. You could have traded. But even some of the hedge funds, depending on where they had their assets, weren't allowed to trade. It wasn't like you just couldn't trade GameStop. It was you couldn't trade GameStop at a couple brokerages that didn't have enough cash on their balance.
Right. So this is the problem. It's not just, I mean, there's morons and there's nefarious people. Like we keep mentioning the financial crisis in 7 and 8, or at least it got started in 7 and 8. That same practice that happened then that caused that is still going on today at the same rate. Like nothing has changed. Nobody's in prison for this shit. So I think the problem with this is that the people were right, but they were right for the wrong reason. They were right because they're like, you know what? Let's fucking, this is all stupid. So let's get involved and make a joke out of it because it is a fucking joke. The whole thing's a goddamn joke because it only been, look, and by and large, the market itself helps a lot of people, right? 401ks exist. Having people that are actually ethical, like this this dude here, manage your money over a long period of time, you can fucking gajillion X your investment, and it's relatively safe, provided the country doesn't collapse. But at that point, the currency's worthless anyway, so who gives a shit, right? That's good. But the lack of confidence in the market, the marketplace in general, and how everybody thinks, it's a predatory fucking, the fix is in, the game is fucking bullshit, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You're going to get two kinds of people. You're going to get the kind of people that say, fuck that, I'm out. And you're going to get the predators who are going to go take part in it and make it even worse. So the next generation of market people are going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
This is a story as old as time, right? And hopefully the listeners of this take the initiative to say, I'm pissed off about this. Let me go learn about Jack Bogle and Vanguard. Let me go learn about people that were champions of individual investors that managed in the trillions that didn't shut down trading. And let me understand what does work and ways that I can participate in being an investor. And everyone can. That's the whole thing. You just have to find the right partner. By the way, half of all mutual fund managers, half, have $0 invested in their own fund. Okay. And so this whole concept of skin in the game, I put all of my money, all my public assets into our funds, right? Mm. There's like, it's crazy to me. So again, back to this whole concept, you got to have partners that are going to look out for you.
Or,
look into Vanguard.
But I understand. Like, and look, I've had Vanguard over the years from different 401ks and all this other stuff, right? They do our insurance policies and it is your, you know, tried and true, old school, you know, they've been there for 1,000 years and they're probably still getting HJs on Euclid and NYC. And that's fine at Green Tea. They do a great job there. And it's 150, very discreet. But what's to stop somebody tomorrow from waking up and saying, all right, I'm going to pick a random stock, Gilead. Let's go Gilead. Let's go ride Gilead to the moon.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Well, right. Will they stop the market again? Will these places shut off again? And if that is the case, then how do you get?
Well, that's
kids
kind of the point he was making before.
To be invested,
the market shorting exposes all of this bullshit, right? Like Robinhood and several other brokerages have been exposed. They were overplaying their hand. They were trying to get too big too quick. Whatever the case is,
right?
I don't know what it is. I mean, really, what they're doing is gambling with other people's money, which is as unethical as anything could possibly be in life, right?
But isn't that what we're all doing? I guess is my point to all of this.
What do you mean?
With investing in stocks and everything else, there's companies that a lot of people believe in that are very high right now, like Tesla, right? Mm-hmm. Me personally, Tesla in the long run, first of all, they don't have the numbers to justify that high of a stock. That price right now is insane.
Disagree, because I think they're going to be mining asteroids in the next 15 years, and that's going to be a complete game changer.
But I believe that'll be under a different company if I'm not, right? Isn't it going to be under SpaceX? For all of their, it's going to be two different IPOs for that.
Well, that's going to be a rising tide lifts all boats because Tesla will make the equipment for SpaceX, right? So all that's going to go up together. They're already doing it now.
Potentially.
Like, no, the engineers from Tesla build the shit and a lot of the mechanical stuff for SpaceX. But anyway,
I just don't know who owns it. But with all the EV that's coming out, right? Every car is electric now. Almost every single company has announced it. I've been in three of them so far. Even the Mustang, that Mach-E I just got in a couple weeks ago, right? We were getting the Bronco for the show because we're trying to get O.J. Simpson on the back of a Bronco for the show. It did not look and appear. Yeah, you're welcome for that. Signed jersey behind Dan over there. But it didn't look.
I've got a Bronco reservation.
So do I. I just met with him. I got the Badlands edition, baby. Let's go. But with that, that Mach-E was no different than a Tesla, in my opinion. It was $42,000. And it was real, real nice. The premium version goes for $59,000. Ford is not a sponsor of this show whatsoever. But that is the future. That is now. Those cars are out.
Right. So if you know that, right? Because keep in mind that Elon Musk put the goddamn patent for his batteries, which is what nobody else could figure out.
And which is why I love him. Yes. Okay? Yes.
He didn't do it out of the kindness of his heart. He's a good businessman. He wanted all cars to be electric, so they have to buy his energy grid that he's been trying to get passed through first in California and then nationwide since fucking 2010. Because I used to be one of the bodyguards at the fucking Edison Electric Institute thing every year, and he would give this speech year after year. He's trying to put a honeycomb pattern of charging stations all over the country, right?
Right.
The government pays half. He pays half out of his own fucking pocket, right?
Yeah.
And that just exists. And whomever gets first to that energy grid, it's over.
Right.
Whoever builds that infrastructure first, because not only do you build it and get the money in the first place, but you get fucking pennies on every piece of energy that comes through there and all the upkeep over the years and blah, blah, blah. It's the biggest contract maybe in human history.
Yes.
That's probably why people love the stock so much.
And a lot of people say this. It's a battery company and not a car company, and I understand that. Now, let's say something happens to
he's
Tesla.
He's also going to be mining the fucking rare earth minerals in space that he needs to bring back down. That's why that fucking SpaceX thing is relevant, because he doesn't have to go to an outside source or Afghanistan or South America, any of that shit, to find any of this stuff.
And I'll be able to keep an eye on them because I'll be on the moon with my baby in my rocket ship, because that's what I do with stonks. But let's say Tesla falls apart, right? How is that any different than me believing in a bunch of kids on Reddit and saying, great, I want to ride AMC. Please stop turning off the stock market.
If you look back in the history of stocks, and by the way, it may not seem like this, but I am the world's biggest optimist. My favorite investing book is called Triumph the Optimist. It looks at 120 years of stock returns in countries all over the world. And it's amazing to see. 1900 US, with all the stocks were railroad companies, right? And then you kind of rinse repeat what's happened with electronics and internet and TV and healthcare and biotech and energy. And things go in and out of favor all the time. Companies fail. That is the beauty of creative destruction and free markets, right? Tesla didn't exist 20 years ago, right? You didn't have the big names now. Apple was like the GameStop at one point. It was a failing business that was garbage. Nobody wanted it. 10 years from now, who knows what these companies are going to be? But putting money to work, and by the way, we haven't talked about this yet, but globally, the U.S. is only half the world's stock market size. And at one point, it was way smaller, okay? And so diversifying all around the world at entrepreneurs in India and China and Japan and the U.K., much where the rest of the world is much less, the stocks are much cheaper than they are in the U.S. But you want to be invested in it. And a great example here, look, what's the best way to get really rich? Is start your own business. That's hard. It's really hard. Most businesses fail. It's like 1,000 businesses fail in the US per week pre-pandemic. Okay, that's normal. But some succeed, massively successful. The second best way to get rich is invest with other great entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. And you can do that through stocks and private companies. So diversifying, and the best possible way to go about this, you buy a stock. You put it, there's an old article called the coffee can portfolio, meaning you like put it in and put it away and forget about it. And you hold that thing 10, 20, 30 years, right? That sounds crazy, but that's, if you look at, there's some old investing books called 100-to-1 in the stock market, 100 baggers, not 100% or a double. You make 100 times your money, right? But that takes often, the best performing stock, I think, in the last 20, 30 years, Monster Energy, compounded 30% per year. Amazing, right? But it takes time. Often these take 10 plus years. And so putting them away, forgetting about it, adding more and more over time is such a great way to invest, because you'll own all these. Maybe Tesla goes away. maybe, you know, the next, it's Rivian. I mean, what a good looking pickup truck.
I know.
Is.
I just saw that thing. Yeah. It's
crazy,
but
it's
right?
Not, it's not real though. Right?
Yeah. No, Nokia. They're Nikola.
They're, yeah,
Nikola.
Yeah.
That was the one that
the Rivians
they had to push
are, the Rivians
down
are supposed
hill.
To ship.
The Nikola is the one that's not real then.
Yes. Not
that
yet.
Was just like a CGI thing.
Well, no, it exists, but they're doing the Mack trucks and then they're doing the pickups now. But they had a huge capital raise for it and all that stuff. The Rivian is supposed to be the next big thing with Tesla, and I know people have money in that.
I don't know how they're going to make these where they're different enough for it to even matter other than the body style. I mean, it is a direct distribution of energy to the wheel. Every single one of them has a 0 to 60 time and a torque foot-pound in the exact same range.
I agree.
So it's just going to be about which one looks cool, right?
Yes.
And who can keep it cheaper.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
In the long run. And I think that's what Tesla will probably run into. I don't know that Musk necessarily cares.
I don't think he cares.
I don't either.
I think
and that's why we love him. And that's why everybody rallies around this guy online.
Well, he also made, I mean, it's not, it's his popularity is because he runs his mouth a lot and doesn't mind talking shit. And he calls out people for doing dumb shit all the time. But the business success is not because of that. He's not a bad businessman that just fucking, you know, like fell into it because he's a charming guy. It's not how it works. Like he, these plans that he's been laying for decades now are starting to come to fruition.
You know, look, he's a brilliant guy.
So I think like you see him now, they're doing stuff with the Tesla truck and the fucking cars they're obviously getting, but he's, I don't know if you've seen over the last month or so, a lot of the promo videos for the fucking transfer trucks.
Yep.
Of Tesla have come out.
Yeah.
Right. And people have been organically sharing them on. Look, I saw a Tesla truck on the road the other day. I've never seen one in my fucking life. And all of a sudden, everybody on Instagram is running into them randomly everywhere.
Right.
Right. And posting. Of course, they're paying these people to do that.
Yeah.
But it's good marketing. But that's the next thing, right? To get rid of these things. And then, to be honest, if they're not working on some kind of electric seaborne vessel, because if you really want to stop, we talk about this all the time. If you really want to stop polluting the environment with fossil fuels, cruise ships and fucking transport vessels are the 83% mm-hmm. of all fucking carbon is coming from just those two things right there,
yeah.
right? So if you can replace that and then you come into the U.S. and other countries and replace those with electric vehicles as well, human carbon emissions are almost gone at that point. But that's 90% of all carbon emissions are gone immediately. As soon as you can make that transition. I don't know what people are going to bitch about then. It's Dr. Seuss, I guess.
Well,
I don't fucking know.
Look, Bill Gates wants to have
it's
fake
the weather
cows
on Mars.
Yeah, Bill Gates wants to have fake cows and eat those because he owns all the farmland and all that stuff. But that'll switch us over into the cryptocurrency. Mm. I got to figure out where you're at on this because, you know, like we were talking about with Musk, he's so cool and so influential that he can tweet out about fucking Dogecoin or, I mean, shit, Tesla bought $1.5 billion in, what is it?
Bitcoin.
You own it. Bitcoin, yeah. I don't know how that's legal for a company to do. That's another fucking story. But are you in any crypto for your clients? And how do you manage that? And what do you say? What do you say Dogecoin is?
So I've actually, one of the few public asset managers that totally discloses how I invest my money. I do that. I've been doing it annually. And there's a kind of a four-part series I did last year. The first one is called the Get Rich Portfolio. There's a lot of stuff we talked about today, starting a business, investing, getting ways to get rich slow, ways to get rich fast. The second one was the Stay Rich Portfolio. So once you've won the game, one of the biggest mistakes wealthy people make is they take way too much risk and they concentrate and lose it all. And not just like millionaires, there's like 30 billionaires will do this, and it's really foolish. And one of the takeaways, by the way, is most people assume that you should put all your safe money in cash and bonds. And historically, because of inflation, cash and bonds are actually fairly risky. And so the best way to preserve your wealth once you've won the game is to have a broad, diversified allocation all around the world. And so we call this the global market portfolio. And if you went out and bought every public asset in the world, every stock, every real estate, every bond, every farm, what does that look like? Well, it's roughly half stocks and half bonds. And of that, it's about half US and half the rest of the world. And that's actually a beautiful portfolio. You can buy that portfolio of ETFs or mutual funds for 0.05%, essentially free. Okay, amazing, right? Put that in your account, forget about it, you're done. You'll probably make 5% after inflation per year at Infinium. Pretty low volatility. And we were actually tweeting about, by the way, corporate balance sheets, because most companies actually put most of their money in T-bills or cash or bonds, right? And we said actually a safer way to do it, to protect it, is actually to invest it, a little bit of it. You don't invest all of it, but invest a little bit of it. Well, Saylor and these others have taken that to the far extreme and say, well, we're going to invest it in crypto. Not my conclusion, theirs, but we were talking about it a year ago. And so third, I'd say, how do I invest my own money? Getting back to crypto. My asset allocation looks a lot like the Talmud. This is a 2,000-year-old piece of advice, okay? It said, let every man invest a third in business, a third in land, and a third keep in reserve. That portfolio, you can take it back 100 years and demonstrate how it works, is unbelievably robust, okay? And so it's similar to the global market portfolio. It adds that sort of real asset component, which I put in real estate, which is what most people's main source of wealth is, farmland. I come from a farming family, or even commodities. Where does crypto fall in? So I love telling investors, I say, look, this is your default starting place, the global market portfolio. No one ever has it. Most Americans put all their money in US stocks and bonds. And that's crazy, because guess what Japanese do? They put all their money in Japanese stocks and bonds. Guess what Aussies do? Guess what Brits do? Guess what Chinese do? And I guarantee you, you ask anyone in many of these countries the last 10 years, Brazil, Greece, Russia, on, where their markets went down 80%, say, was that a good idea? And they'd say, hell no, that was crazy. Why do we do that?
Right. So it's not only a good idea for the individual investor, but it's also makes the market itself more robust, right? Less likely to fail.
And U.S. versus foreign, it's a coin flip, 50-50 in any given year. U.S. has had this amazing run last 10 years. Not normal. Last time it happened was the 90s. Before that, 1910. Okay? So foreign often does just as crypto. Crypto is a percentage of the world market portfolio ballpark right now. Let's call it, last I checked, maybe 0.1%, 0.5%. So I say, look, you're an individual investor. You want to go crazy, put in 0.1%. Everyone's like, well, I'm not going to, that's nothing. And I say, yeah, but let's say it goes 10x. Good news is you have 1%. Let's say it goes 100x. Well, now you have 10%. You want to go crazy, put 1% in. And the global market portfolio will wax and wane. And that way, no matter what, you win or lose. A great piece of advice, despite how boring and academic and quant everything we do is based on history, because of the very real human component, we say, look, regret minimization is a very real thing. Bezos talks about this all the time, despite me hating Amazon. He says, you know, and so to think about regret minimization, let's say you didn't buy Bitcoin and it goes to 10 million, whatever it goes to. Mm-hmm. How will you feel? Now, how will you feel if it goes to zero? And you do own 90% of your net worth in it. So I'm all about balance. And so putting some in as a percentage of the global market portfolio, I think is totally reasonable if you want to. But again, have a plan for it. What are you going to do with it? If it goes up a bunch, what are you going to do if it goes down a bunch? Same thing.
No, and look, overall, I agree with your strategy and you are correct. I just, in the case of AMC and GameStop, that's the craziest shit that I've ever seen. And to me, those kids all could have just kept writing that to 1,000. But clearly something else was stacked against them. And that's what I have the real issue with. But, you know, look, do you learn a lesson? Like you were saying, you know, closer to the top of the show, maybe. I mean, fuck, I remember the first stock that I lost my ass on. And, you know, as a kid, and it was BarnesandNoble.com when they went, you know, it was. As I believed books on, I'm an author, and, you know, I love writing, and I believe that books online was the future and that you could read them there and not necessarily have to go and buy them and all that other thing. I was correct in that assessment. However, it was a different company that ended up doing it better than them, and it was Amazon.
Yeah, but Amazon never made money on books. They made money when they pivoted to, like, they did the right thing. So he was talking about the railroads earlier, and everybody had all their money wrapped up in fucking railroads. What the railroads never understood is that they weren't in the railroad industry. They were in the transportation industry of goods and people, right? And then trucks came along, and then planes came along. they should have been fucking investing their returns not in more railroad shit or keeping the money. They should have been buying trucks. They should have been buying planes or whatever, working on the tech or whatever. Amazon did the right goddamn thing. They're like, we're not in the book transportation or the book shipping industry. We are in the shipping industry.
Correct. Right? Yeah.
And they pivoted to all products and they fucking, here we are. And look, they don't even make all their money. They lose money on their shipping. Right. Yeah. At some point they figured out, hey, this isn't really a scalable thing at these shipping rates. We're going to end up losing money, but we have such a large amount of data. We run data services companies now and we can fucking make, that's where 75% of the revenue comes from now. Mm-hmm. Ingenuity is the answer to creative destruction, not trying to prevent it. We shouldn't be trying to hold on to coal and oil jobs. If they're going away, we should be trying to figure out how to get in on the next thing and make it better. Right.
Right.
That's how it should fucking work. And the way we do it, this nostalgia we have for old labor, which by the way is less efficient and usually more dangerous than the new thing that comes along to replace it, is fucking mind boggling to me. I don't understand any of that shit.
Coal. You need to put all your money in coal. What were you going to say about Barnes and Noble?
Well, coal's a funny example because if you go back, you can take stock industries in the 1920s. And this is a good example of the industry versus the stocks. There's only been one industry that's been down 6 years in a row, and that was coal twice in the past 100 years. The two best performing industries in history are number one, tobacco, number two, beer. Yeah. So if you want everything about investing, it's catering to people's desires. Two quick comments. One is that you want to have some fun and get upset. Google your author name on Amazon and you'll see a bunch of fraudulent books. We're not going to go in there. You can do this later. It'll just get.
Oh, yeah. Look, man, mine will come down like 10th or 12th on my name. And
yeah,
I'm a fucking last book was number one in the goddamn world. So for real.
There's a post we have on our blog called Learn to Invest that gives you like 5 to 10 books that are such a great education on how to get started, how to think about the world, understand what's happened. I mean, you think this GameStop situation was bad? Russia and China in the 20th century said, you know what, thank you very much. We're closing the capital market all together and we're taking all of it.
Yeah.
There's been a million examples of like hyperinflation, government shutting down, taking assets, like appropriating them. Like the history of capital markets is people dicking you over, whether Wall Street, whether it's governments. And so trying to figure out how to think about that and protect yourself, I think is really important. So there's some really fun books on there from a number of different authors.
Yeah, there's a bunch of cool shit out there. It's just what you believe in and what your financial strategy is for the future. And again, I even though I was railing on GameStop and AMC, I really, really do want to say that you are correct in that. I believe a third in the market, a third in real estate, a third in, I think that is the proper way to invest for the long term and not this short term gambling shit. But also these kids were right and they could have gotten paid from it. What's to stop it from happening in the future? And do you have guys on it now? Because I've read that a bunch of brokerage firms are now putting some of their lower level guys on just Reddit feeds.
Everything I do. So going back 20 years when I was talking about losing all my money trading options.
Was it Barnes & Noble? Was it Barnes & Noble?
It was the haymaker was Biogen. I was a biotech engineer from a different lifetime. But, sorry, what was the question again? You had me feel all the pain.
Yeah, but what's to stop it? So take a Biogen, right? Let's say all the kids rallied around and said, hey, man, let's ride Biogen to the fucking moon. I don't even know if it's still a stock anymore, but...
Okay, the Reddit.
What's to stop it again from happening? Because it happened again 4 days ago with GameStop. So, they wrote it again 200%.
My bigger concern across capital markets is less the plumbing and it's more corporate fraud, what goes in within companies, because that destroys way more. I mean, you think about Enron, WorldCom, on and on and on, right? Like that destroys way more lives and amounts of wealth, people's retirements, everything than everything on what we're talking about combined. But what I learned when I went through this 20 years ago, lost all my money, is I said, you know what? My emotions and behavioral biases that I have are absolute worst enemy in investing. I take as much risk as you'll give me. I'm overconfident. If you want to read like the behavioral biases, I have all of them. So I said, I got to set up guardrails to protect myself on how to invest. And so that's how I ended up becoming, I call it a quant. I mean, really a quant light. All that means is you have rules. And so you could have rules where you say, you know what? I invest half stocks and half in bonds. I rebalance once a year and that's it. I spend 5 minutes a year. Fantastic way to invest. Pay as little in fees and taxes as possible. Done with it. Amazing way to invest. For me, our approach is like the shareholder yield. We have allocation funds. It says, I want rules and I need to understand how to put these in place to counteract all these terrible behaviors that I have so that I'm not doing dumb shit, which is what everyone does. Like the emotions of making money versus the emotions of losing money. And we haven't even been through a long bear market in 10 plus years. Like we go through another 50 to 90% bear market, which has happened before and which is normal.
Yeah.
Like that's par for the course. How do people think about when they're upside down on their mortgage, when they bought three houses like in 2007 and got upside down, when they're thinking about making money and opening their statement, checking their Robinhood 20 times a day? You know, it's a totally different emotional. So learning to put the guardrails in place, I think is really important. So that's what we do. I most cases, it runs on autopilot for our funds. Like I'm not paying any attention. It's a rarity for me to even pay attention to what the stocks are doing. It's not something I want to spend any time on. So I haven't been on Reddit in years.
Really? And no plans for the future, because if this does happen again, It's going to be more than a trend, and it's going to become an everyday thing. And
it's going to happen again. I mean, we saw it last week. The Redditors made another run on GameStop.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Anytime they're going to keep waiting, and this is not going to go away. This is like Epstein didn't kill himself. This one's going to go for a while because people are fucking pissed off now, and they figured out kind of how to get involved, right? So the internet is just trolls, anyways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you got to remember, like the pump and dump or people pushing stocks, this is a story as old as time. Mm-hmm. I mean, these short squeezes, I mean, you want to see a bad short squeeze, look back to Volkswagen about a decade ago. That was 10 times bigger than GameStop was in terms of magnitude and size. But look, hedge fund managers get together and have dinner and talk positions. That's been going on for many years. You have these fund managers on the long side that go on CNBC all day and pump their stocks,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And then now you just have this amplification on social. This is something that's been going on forever. Now, what you can't do is make misleading statements. You can't lie about something. You're going to go to jail, all right? The SEC is woefully undercapitalized. Like I've reported frauds before, whistleblowers, right? You see some of these huge awards. You can't be fraudulent and make false statements or you'll get in deep shit, no matter who you are, on the long side, on the short side, if you're a hedge fund, if you're an individual, be very careful about that. And if you think you're anonymous on a message board, well, I wouldn't count on that. I think a lot of people will get in trouble pumping investments. And you've seen this in penny stock land forever, my God, and in the junior miners in Canada and all these garbage stocks. But these crowd behavior, you also tend to see in market peaks, right? Where everyone is getting involved in markets. Last time we've really seen some of this behavior is late 90s, which, you know, it can be dangerous.
Yeah. Lastly, what do you think about Jim Cramer, right? He's kind of the most famous figure for stonks, obviously. And you see him on every day. He seemed flabbergasted what was going on with AMC and GameStop and all that stuff. He didn't really have any answers, and he seemed more or less fed up with it. What's the real shit with that guy? Like, behind the scenes, do you guys like Cramer or believe in Cramer or any of that stuff? Or is he just a propped up guy who's, you know, made a sweet living out of a lesser known gig?
You can find some of my old articles on the street and Real Money from over a decade ago if you dig hard enough. You know, there's two parts to that. There's the sort of news anchor media type, right? Which is like the hardest job in the problem. I would be so on the world. I'd be so bad at being an anchor man or talking about stocks and news all day. My God. I spend all my time trying to get individuals and institutions investing the right way. I think it's my biggest passion is getting this personal finance money taught in school, but also teaching people, trying to get everyone investing, trying to set up ways to get everyone in the U.S. investing. We have an article called How to Narrow the Wealth and Income Gap, about getting people investing in their retirement accounts, about setting up what we call a freedom dividend, on and on, right? I love that people should get interested in investing, but the right lessons, which is not the stock trading class we learned in middle school, right? It's the wrong lessons to teach.
But it
so Kramer,
to your
a lot of the
he speaks to the lowest common denominator in a lot of ways, right? I mean, it's unfortunate that what you were saying earlier about people that got involved here, the lesson they might learn, it's definitely true for startups. Startups that have too much money in the beginning, they are able to spend their way out of mistakes instead of learning lessons, and they ultimately fail most of the time because of that, right? So, I mean, it's a good lesson. I'm just worried that people are going to get turned off by that. And now that people are getting excited about it, particularly in America, what they're going to do first is find the loudest asshole they can find to talk to them about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or somebody that agrees with their worldview, not necessarily the best information that exists. And now they're going to be operating out in the market with this information. There's going to be consequences of that. The first consequence is they're going to lose a lot of their money. But then they're going to get lucky sometimes, more so than anything else. There will be a new pattern of behavior inside the market, and people that are in the market that are bad actors or just predators in general are going to start fucking learning that behavior and taking advantage of it. You know what I mean? So it's all this all always works out the same, no matter what you do.
Yeah,
doesn't matter, yeah, Ross.
I understand.
Just
I know it's a rigged system.
Just end it right now.
I understand. Look, I've already said I'm ready to be taken out of this earth. I just need this life insurance policy with Vanguard to go through.
Yeah.
These fucking old fucks are trying to bring up Xanax that I take. Like, I'm a Kramer here.
I'm taking all Xanax because you won't give me my fucking insurance.
Yes,
goddamn it,
dude. Yes, but that's why. What were you gonna say? I apologize.
You know, there's a good example and a trend that initially I was a little naysayer about, but I think is a huge positive. And it's that if you look at the world of celebrities, athletes, and look at the ones that make a lot of money, almost universally, it is not from their day job of an actor or sports. It's from business and it's from investing. And so you're starting to see. When I do a lot, I've invested in over 200 private companies. And as you see the people invested, it's now Nas, it's Kevin Durant, it's Joe Montana.
Dude, I wrote a script for Ashton Kutcher. He was the richest actor in Hollywood off of all of his investments.
At one point, he owned like AC owned like 30% of Uber at some point, like early on or some shit like that.
Yeah.
And then divested a little bit. That dude's fucking, for the characters he plays, he's actually apparently pretty fucking smart.
He's a really smart guy. Yeah. And the thing with the divorce with Demi Moore was he was worried, not because of the divorce, but that she was going to go and disclose how much money he'd actually made. And it was somewhere over a $500 million. I mean, it was alarming where you're like, oh shit, Kelso is fucking smart, dude. And he invested in all of those angel companies and all this stuff. So,
And this is actually a feature, not a bug,
right?
Investing in the private companies, because you can't sell them. So you're forced to own them for 10 years or however long they do well. Mm. And a big problem, another one we talk about that seems to be changing, but not all the way, is these antiquated accredited investor rules that prohibit people of low net worth from investing in private investments. It should just be like a DMV style test. Mm-hmm. Can you answer these 10 questions? Mm-hmm. Do you understand what you're doing? Because let's be clear, you can nuke your money and incinerate it in 100 different ways quicker than investing in startups like Forex and futures and options and collectibles and fungible tokens and cryptocurrency and penny stocks and on and on and on, right? Hopefully that's changing in a better way. But it's a really cool way to think about investing in innovation that forces you to behave and hold something as opposed to trying to, you know, trade it. And that's like Kutcher, George Clooney, Jay-Z, on and on and on have learned this lesson.
Yeah, and especially in booze, Jay-Z and Clooney in particular with the Casamigos. And yesterday, Jay-Z sold Ace of Spades. He got about a $500 million off of that. But you're right. Look, tobacco and booze, we're developing our own seltzer here that we're going to be testing live on air on Friday.
Testing. means we're gonna get.
You guys send me some. I want to try it.
Oh yeah, for sure. We're into the high ABV. So we had our guy Doug jack that up to 7.6, trying to get the calories down. They're about 120 right now. We're gonna test those live on air. We've been working on that for a few months, and we're amped about that. I'm sure you got into the tobacco through Winston-Salem, obviously.
The name of my high school was R.J. Reynolds High School, literally named after a tobacco company. Amazing school, loved it. I got a ton of friends still in the South. I miss it. I get homesick, but literally named after a tobacco company.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Smoke them if you got them. Now's the point in the show where we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Maybe in your case, who is the guy that you learned from investing-wise that really turned you on, that really juiced you off, where you're like, all right, I'm going to get into this, I'm going to go full bone, and that style fits my style of investing.
I'm gonna split this into two. You know, my old man and my mother came from two different worlds. My old man grew up on a farm in Kansas. We're talking like no running water, outhouse farm, right? And was like the first in his family to go to college. I was smiling as you guys were talking about Musk and aerospace because he was an aerospace guy, and you know, taught me a lot about money and investing and finance. And he was sort of the Peter Lynch mentality, you know, where you buy what you know, you do the research, you hold it for a long time. He had all the same behavioral problems I did as well, though. And then my mom, on the flip side, was, you know, came from a Southern family. My grandfather worked in the boiler room as like an engineer at RJR, you know, thus the Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
And, you know, she had this like Warren Buffett mentality where she said, well, you know, if you invest in a company and you hold it forever. And both of those ended up being great lessons. Now, the problem is you have to become a student of history because you realize that everyone's worldview and time horizon is extremely dependent on what they experienced. So if you were a Japanese investor, for example, in the 80s, we had the biggest bubble we've ever seen in the history of the world, stock markets in Japan in the 80s. Its stock market, despite being a top three world economy, has gone nowhere for 20 years. So if you're an investor in Japan, and I go over and we'll do meetups with investors all over the world, I do it in Tokyo, and you talk to investors there, they say buy and hold is not a thing. Like, you don't invest and just hold stocks because they don't go anywhere, you know, because that's what they've experienced for 20 plus years. And so you got to take kind of the lessons, but understand very much that it's very specific to everyone's narrow world experience. So right now, there's a global survey that asks people what they expect on their investments, Schroeder's. The U.S. was the single highest expectations at 15% per year, which is absolutely insane. That will never happen going forward, that amount. I can't say with certainty. Who knows? Maybe Musk finds free energy on the moon. I don't know. But like any relationship, as you guys know, what's the worst possible thing that can happen in a relationship is expectations mismatch reality. So everyone's just extrapolating forever this experience, and understand that the good times follow the bad and vice versa. Thinking back to the roaring 20s, 100 years ago, what followed that was the Great Depression. But anyway, mom and dad, I love you both. Thank you so much for everything and lessons learned, but understand they only are a part of the puzzle.
Of course, of course. And where can everybody find you on social media, and as well as your books as well?
Not too many Mebs running around. So Meb Faber, usually that's blog, Twitter, YouTube, the podcast. Got a handful of academic papers and books that are free. That's at Cambria Investments or Cambria Funds.
Awesome, awesome. Listen, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation today. Will you come back in 3 weeks when it's another stock going to the fucking moon on Reddit? I just want to I want to get you in real time as it's going, and we'll put the ticker up next to your head, and we can see that people are back in on Gilead or something like that. You know?
Deal. Hopefully it's like in the emerging markets or somewhere else. I'm really bullish on the rest of the world, the really cheap stuff that nobody wants.
Oh, so you're going full Jordan Belfort? What, yeah. Going for penny stocks?
No, these are the biggest companies. Emerging markets, we're talking like, you know, Russia. We're talking about emerging Europe. I mean, some of the biggest countries in the world are just really cheap relative. The UK, right? Our British friends, the stock market is about a third the valuation of the US right now.
The reason I don't get into it, I've never dabbled in it, to be on in honesty, is I don't live there and I don't know what goes on in their countries. So therefore, I don't have a pulse for it, where it's just like, I don't, we had that rapper Zuby on the show.
Yeah.
And he was in London and he's like, dude, we're in full lockdown. We have not left our houses. I had no idea that was still going on. So
I try to keep it to something I know. They've already canceled like their summer holiday in spring and summertime in the UK. Everybody goes on holiday. Like everything's shut down for a month, and everybody, they're just touring Europe and shit. That's not happening this year, apparently.
Yeah.
Now that you guys are opened up in Texas, I can just come there and hang out in person. We'll we'll sample the seltzer live in chat.
Yeah.
Come on down to Austin, Texas. Wheelchair, open it up. Shout out to Greg Abbott today. You did it, my friend. Now we'll see what Austin's shitty city council will do. Really surprised that I got that out with that tongue twister. Big pat on the back for me. Big pat on the back for you. Thanks for being on the show. Meb, for D'Anthony Holloway, I am Ross Patterson. We are the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone. Thanks again to Omaha Steaks for being the title sponsor of the Tetherball Academy Media Network, including our Drinking Bros family out there. Get yourself some amazing steaks using the link in the show notes. Supporting our partners like Omaha Steaks is one of the best ways you can support our shows so we can keep bringing you the podcast you know and love on a day-in, day-out basis. Thank you to OmahaSteaks.com.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.